Neil Peart, Rush's spectacular drummer and enlightened New Age lyricist for all but their first album, died January 7, 2020 of brain cancer. He was 67. Here at In the Studio, we mourn the loss of Neil Peart. May God rest his eternal soul. Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, the members of Rush recall their tenacious effort through 7 albums and tours to finally create permanent waves.
Closer to the heart, I will choose a path that's clear. I will choose free will. For a long time, Rush was not the kind of band that got much airplay. There was not a lot of interest, usually got bad reviews. A lot of people really hated the band, but there were also a lot of people that did like the band, that were inside the band as much as we are. Rush fans are terrific for that. They've lived with us through so many different stages of our development, and they've taken it quite personally, and that is a great tribute to us, to have that kind of audience that grows with us.
We were starting to get so big that we were doing 3 or 4 nights in those places, 5 nights in those kind of theaters. And it just wasn't practical because there were so many other people who weren't getting to see us because we were spending 5 days in one city, you know. And it wasn't fair, really, when it came down to it, that people wanted to see us and couldn't. So you couldn't justify it anymore, you know. We couldn't say it was a compromise. It was a limitation that we faced, that too many people wanted to see us. It's not something we're able to control. So we were pushed into the arenas, basically, by the laws of supply and demand.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush, in the studio with Redbeard.
If you look at the remarkable longevity and level of worldwide album sales of the band Rush, you could easily assume that these guys must have done everything right, that all the tumblers clicked from Rush's inception in 1974 in Toronto, Canada. But truth be told, the hard rock power trio faced obstacles at every turn and at every phase, including starting out. When no Canadian or U.S. record label would sign Rush, the band put out their debut on their own independent label. After it attracted a U.S. major label deal, then the first 4 Rush albums seemed to attract mean-spirited critics like ants at a picnic. And with the exception of a handful of FM stations in Cleveland, Detroit, and Chicago, Rush couldn't get arrested at U.S. radio. All of the adversity only seemed to increase the collective resolve of Rush. Drummer, lyricist Neil Peart, singer, bass player Geddy Lee, and guitarist Alex Lifeson, who told me that Rush really could only rely on one thing.
Well, you know, I don't think we've ever really depended on anyone outside of our audience for anything. For a long time, Rush was not the kind of band that got much airplay. There was not a lot of interest, usually got bad reviews. A lot of people really hated the band, but there were also a lot of people that did like the band, that were inside the band as much as we are. Rush fans are terrific for that. They've lived with us through so many different stages of our development, and they've taken it quite personally, and that is a great tribute to us, to have that kind of audience that grows with us. You know, I think a lot of our audience would say that there are things that they don't like that we've done, but they're vocal about it, and they'll still wait for the next record to see where we go with it. I mean, you have to have that support if you want to exist as long as we've existed.
calling after. It's changing every day. The change of the seasons and not for the reason to want them to get away. Quiet and pensive, my thoughts are apprehensive.
Fly By Night is the title song from the second Rush album in 1975, the first to feature drummer lyricist Neil Peart. Fly By Night is the next of the original Mercury Records albums to get the full re-release deluxe treatment with versions in high-quality vinyl, digital download, high-resolution digital audio, even a Blu-ray version of Fly By Night in 5.1 surround sound. It's online and in stores now, with all 14 original Mercury albums releasing in chronological order throughout 2015. By 1976, mostly due to tireless touring as a support act, plus word of mouth on the strength of the 2112 album, Rush was starting to build a loyal fan base who would sell out theaters. Here's Rush drummer, lyricist Neil Peart.
And each stage of our development has been a real struggle on our part, where we've been holding tenaciously onto our last level. And when we graduated to headlining the small theaters, you know, the vaudeville leftovers and so on, the 3,000, 4,000 seat theaters, we clung to that so tenaciously that we were starting to get so big that we were doing 3 or 4 nights in those places, 5 nights in those kind of theaters. And it just wasn't practical because there were so many other people who weren't getting to see us because we were spending 5 days in one city, you know. And it wasn't fair, really, when you came down to it, that people wanted to see us and couldn't. So you couldn't justify it anymore, you know. We couldn't say it was a compromise. It was a limitation that we faced, that too many people wanted to see us. It's not something we're able to control. So we were pushed into the arenas, basically by the laws of supply and demand.
We'll be right back.
Rush from their 1976 album 2112, their fourth, with the 2112 overture Temples of Syrinx medley, which helped Rush pick up the first favorable notices in the music press by melding hard rock, progressive rock, and sci-fi futuristic tales influenced by Russian-American novelist, philosopher, playwright Ayn Rand. But before discovering rock and roll as a Toronto teenager, Rush bass player, singer Geddy Lee's biggest influence was his family's past, not the future. And tragically, there was nothing fictitious about it.
Well, at my house, I came from a family of immigrants, basically. My parents survived the Holocaust in Poland and then married after the war and moved to Canada. And, I was basically brought up in that kind of a household, and a household that had survived, to say the least, turbulent time. So there was a total rebuilding in a new country, in a new culture, and trying to adapt. And music was not a prevalent and overriding thing in our family. Since that time, since I've grown up, the more questions I've asked about my father, who died when I was about 12. It turns out that he used to be a musician in his country of Poland when he was very young. He used to play at weddings and bar mitzvahs and these kind of things. So I guess I do have some sort of legitimate musical background, although it's not an actual professional level. In my remembrance of music as a child, obviously very important and usually associated with functions, family functions, and like I say, weddings and happy occasions. And I guess my first awareness of music and its effect on people was probably watching my sister become an absolute Beatle fanatic, which at the time, of course, I couldn't figure out. But I remember when I was very young watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan's show and seeing the reaction to them and all that whole hysteria. And I guess that sort of raised my curiosity about that kind of music. And I'd say probably the first records I liked were Beatle records and Beach Boy records. And I think it wasn't until The Cream that I actually considered doing that kind of thing myself and wanting to emulate those kinds of musicians. I think the music of that later period of Cream and Jeff Beck and the Yardbirds, that was the kind of rock music that actually got me motivated and actually said something to me, although looking back now, I'm not quite sure what it said, but it was a kind of a voice and a kind of a communication that was strong enough to influence me to want to emulate it.
With the release of the 1977 Rush album, A Farewell to Kings, Rush actually garnered pockets of radio play with the song Closer to the Heart, which found Peart's lyrics turning from the fantastic to the philosophical. Here's Rush guitarist Alex Lifeson.
You go through so many things in life, and you learn to deal with things, and you learn to not deal with things. And it's really a matter of more of dealing with everything that comes by, and knowing that you have the power and the strength to do it inside you. And it's an easy thing to say, and it's not always an easy thing to do, but that's the bottom line. You overcome these things, just keep at it, keep working at it. And I don't think he's preaching any kind of therapy, but he's talking about life experience, certainly. And you reach a certain stage in your life, certainly at the stage that I and most of my friends are at, where you start reevaluating your whole life and what it's all about. It's something that everyone goes through, and it just suddenly happens, and so many things seem worthless because you have all the material to do it. You have it in you. Everybody does. We're all made of the same thing. And we can overcome any of these problems or obstacles in our lives so long as we can depend on ourselves and we can love ourselves. And if you need to cry, cry. It's you. It's your tears. You have every right to.
And the men who hold high places must be the ones who start to mold a new reality. Closer to the heart, closer to the heart. Blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art. They forge their creativity closer to the heart. Yes, closer to the heart.
still a concert centerpiece to this day. That's Rush with Musical Signpost, 1977's Closer to the Heart. Up next, Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, and Alex Lifeson return for the crossroads that the band found itself at. For this and your other favorite interviews, visit InTheStudio.net, follow In The Studio on Facebook, or at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. I am Redbeard. You're in the studio with Rush for the anniversary of their breakthrough album, Permanent Waves. Neil Peart, Rush's spectacular drummer and enlightened New Age lyricist for all but their first album, died January 7, 2020 of brain cancer. He was 67. Here at In The Studio, we mourn the loss of Neil Peart. May God rest his eternal soul.
Welcome back to In The Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard.
Thanks, guys. On Permanent Waves, which was preceded in 1978 by the album Hemispheres, featuring a song, The Trees, which included geopolitical current affairs woven into lyrics with metaphors that recalled classic children's fables, cleverly written by Rush drummer Neil Peart.
I try to cover everybody. No, I really do. I look inside myself and I look at my friends. I look at my family. I look at the people that work for us. I look at our audience. I look at the cities we travel through, people I see on planes, people in Europe. I mean, it's limitless, really, and try to get inside their lives a little bit sometimes. I can see an incident, or I can see a particular interplay between people, and it will suggest a universal thing, and that's what's important. And when I look inside myself, I don't ever want to write introspective lyrics, because I think that's immoral. Or there's something wrong with that, looking inside and writing about myself, you know, and I try never to do that. But if I can find something in myself and see it again in my friends, or maybe see it in our audience, or see it somewhere else in the world, then that I want to have, you know, a thing that I have in common, perhaps a parallel that I can draw between my experience and other people's, or issues that affect us all, too. You know, there's things that you read in the paper, things that you see in the news that are really outrageous. And in the course of everyday life, it's so easy to forget them. You know, you can watch all those people get murdered. And at the time, everybody in the world is outraged, and all the people on the street give their little speech on TV and the news, you know. And then they go home to the pressures of their lives, and they have to get up and go to work the next day, and their boss is hassling them. And all these realities of life that should not and cannot be denigrated. I mean, I know how large they loom in your life when you're subject to them. But at the same time, you can't afford to forget about the big things, you know. And it's an issue that I've made over and over again. And going back to a line in Natural Science, it reminds me of that living in their pools, people forget about the sea. It was the analogy then about tide pools, where small aquatic life get washed up into little tide pools, and then the tide goes out, and for them the world suddenly becomes that tiny little area. And for people it is that way too, you know. Their town or their city is the universe, and they judge what's happening by that. And it's everywhere. I mean, you see that kind of provincialism in America, in Canada, in Western Europe, all over the place, where it's shocking to someone who travels as much as I do and sees everybody's troubles, you know, not just one city's or one state's. I look at them all and hear about them all, so consequently it's impossible for me to take that narrow of a view. But at the same time, I have friends who are unemployed, and I have friends who are having difficulties in their lives, so I want that to come out too.
There is unrest in the forest, there is trouble with the trees, for the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
Trouble with the maple.
simplifying society to a forest, and conservative or liberal groups as oaks and maples. That's Rush with The Trees from 1978's album Hemispheres. 4 years before the dawn of MTV and more than two decades before the internet entered the mainstream, Rush sold more than 1 million copies of Hemispheres while beginning to fill arenas on tour. But I, for one, was still getting considerable pushback not to play Rush on the radio from the powerful national radio consultants who influenced nearly 100 FM rock stations like mine back then. For their next album, Permanent Waves, issued in January 1980, bass player singer Geddy Lee told me that Rush made a deliberate move.
We were happy with the challenge of being able to write 20-minute pieces and being able to do sidelong works, and we'd done it a number of times by then, and we felt it was almost becoming a cross to bear for us in a way that it was almost limiting us in what we wanted to be. And we sort of tried to get back to our original desires as songwriters. I think we wanted to become a little more concise and be able to get our ideas across in a more concise and more contemporary manner. Music was changing. Rock music was changing dramatically at that point. There was a lot of bands coming in that were doing things quickly on a low budget and doing things very good, and also doing things that were rhythmically more interesting, and with the influence of reggae and white reggae and, you know, more sort of aggressive punk music that was coming out. And we very much wanted to be part of that. We very much wanted to learn what was going on and reflect the times as opposed to be left behind.
We'll be right back.
inspired by a Toronto radio station that had supported the band from the beginning. That song, The Spirit of Radio from 1980's Permanent Waves, reversed the shutout at American Rock Radio, and they embraced Rush wholeheartedly. Still to come, Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, and Alex Lifeson discuss their steadfast dedication to the trio format. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and a whole lot more at InTheStudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of Permanent Waves from Rush. Neil Peart, Rush's spectacular drummer and enlightened New Age lyricist for all but their first album, died January 7, 2020 of brain cancer. He was 67. Here at In the Studio, we mourn the loss of Neil Peart. May God rest his eternal soul.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard.
Again, thank you, gentlemen. The breakthrough Rush album Permanent Waves from January 1980. After six studio albums, Rush bass player and singer Geddy Lee revealed a remarkable self-awareness on the part of the band in their appraisal of how Rush could grow.
Our ambitions were getting bigger in one sense, in the way that we eventually thought we could sound. And we suddenly accepted the fact that maybe there are other ways to enhance the sound of our band and other textures that we couldn't ignore from the technology that was growing up around us and existed in other areas of the music world. Alex and I would write music during the day, and Neil would work on lyrics at the farmhouse. And in the evenings, we would come together and put the two things together. And really, that was the beginning of a technique or a writing method that we would use for many years after that. I think we actually did a little bit of that in preparing for Permanent Waves.
Thank you.
If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. From the Rush album Permanent Waves, that's Free Will. The sophistication and instrumentation in the musical arrangements by this time were beginning to stretch the limits of the power trio format, which Rush had used live since its inception. I can remember marveling at the omnidextrous Geddy Lee on stage, singing while simultaneously playing very nimble bass guitar and playing synthesizer pedals with his feet all at the same time. That's multitasking. It begs the question of adding a fourth member to Rush, at least for the live shows. Here's guitarist Alex Lifeson.
It does from time to time, but not very seriously. I think at that time, it was something new for us. We did a lot more on a record than we normally would have, and we were afraid about being true to the record live. So we did talk about it, whether it was time to actually bring somebody on the road, and then decided, no, let's not disrupt anything. We'll work around it somehow, and we did. I tell you, those first 10 days in pre-tour rehearsals, you're going crazy. You know, everything sounds awful. First of all, you sound like a really bad copy band of yourself. Yeah, for starters. And then you've got to remember all the, you know, the pedals and all that stuff. But now, you know, you can read a newspaper while you're doing it, and it's always like that. So I don't think we'd ever actually add somebody live. Plus, being a three-piece for so many years, during a time where keyboards had not evolved, really, synthesizers, right. Which are great space utilizers. They really take up a lot of space in the sound. We always had to do that right from the start. You know, I tended to play a lot of suspended chords, very broad chords, to fill more room. And, you know, the same with Geddy's quick bass playing and Neil's very busy drumming. It just filled more area. So it was a good foundation for us. So I think we can really overcome any kind of obstacle like that. Besides, it's a challenge and it makes things more interesting.
Rush drummer, lyricist Neil Peart.
Being a trio is something that is special to us, and I think it's special to our fans too.
It is.
I think if you're a band like Genesis, it's great to have other musicians and works excellently for them, but we are known as a trio. Our reputation has a lot to do with our live show and what the three of us can do live. And we're very proud of what we've been able to stretch a three-piece into being capable of doing. So it's something that is important to us, and our interrelationship is important to us too. And adding a fourth member on any basis, really, even if you only hire a keyboard player for the tour, it's still someone else that you're traveling with, someone else who is concerned about what you're doing. And we would be very hesitant to play with that because we've seen how difficult it is for other bands to get along. And we know that we are truly one of the few bands who are absolute friends, you know, in the truest sense of that word. We have, I don't think, ever run across another relationship that's like ours. And we're lucky that the songwriting gets divided up equally, too, so there aren't political jealousies about whose song gets to be the B-side of the single and the other stuff that a lot of bands go through because they have one good songwriter and the other guys only want the publishing money. For us, we've split the work and we split the rewards, so it eliminates that pressure and it eliminates solo albums and it eliminates somebody quitting the band for so-called musical differences. All of that stuff, you know, it's right out. So we're lucky.
buzz as the profits were reaching on the studio wall. Echoes with the sound of salesmen.
Planting their flag where it all started for them in America, that's Rush live in Cleveland in 2011, now enshrined in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame there. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, and Neil Peart of Rush. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online. Visit inthestudio.net.